Blog Talk Radio.
Time for Sports Card Live. With Sports Card Radio's Ryan Tedders, Colin Tedders, MojoBreak.com's Dan Anderson, and your host, Doug Caskey. Dig it.
Boom. Pack Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. We got tons of stuff to talk about. We got a big release day tomorrow of 2013 Bowman football. We're going to do a little preview on that. We got some rookie anthology talk. We're going to do some national 2013 National Sports Card Collector Convention talk. Ryan was there last year. He's going to give you some tips and tricks and kind of what to expect this year. And talk NBA. We're gonna take up your whole hour and a half with some exciting stuff. We're going to have a giveaway for a break spot. Should be a very fun show. And if anybody wants to call in and talk hobby with us, if you have any questions, call 347-855-8815. You know, if you're looking for values on a card or if you just have some overall industry questions, feel free to call in. So I'm here with Dan and Ryan as always, guys. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. What's up?
Ryan, what's going on, man?
This is the first time I've had to think about sports cards for the last 4 or 5 days, so hopefully I'm healthy and ready to go here. Just been having fun and exploring some other dead niches. So we're back to sports cards today.
Nice. Well, Dan just got back from Vegas, left me in the trenches, you know, as they people call it. I don't call it trenches because open up packs is, wouldn't trade it in for anything. But Dan got back from Vegas. How was Vegas, man? Did you have a few drinks? What did you do? Did you win some money?
Well, I drove, so that was a pretty killer little 8-hour drive each way. Straight through backcountry, man. There's like middle desert, nothing to be seen forever. I dig that drive though. It was cool, man. I mean, it was a little impromptu Vegas trip, and met up with some friends and had a couple beers, played some video games at this killer club on Fremont Street, where it's all 90s, like 80s and 90s retro video games. And it was a good time.
Nice. We were just talking about that off the air. That's a great concept. They have a place, and when we were there for the summit, it was actually closed. We got there too late. But it's a, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a bar, but it's an arcade.
It's a bar. It's like a club. I mean, they got like a DJ going, and you have like little, you can do a little bottle service, like little separate areas where they have console video games like N64 and PlayStation and Xbox and all that stuff, and you can pretty much play whatever game there you want, or you can go to the old school side, which is like all the stand-up arcade style video games like Double Dragon and Mortal Kombat and Killer Instinct and Cruisin' USA and pretty much everything that I remember playing when I was a kid growing up. So it was definitely a good experience, and it was a cool place, and I'm waiting for them to open one up in the Bay Area. So,
do it.
We'll see.
Well, David Stern can rest easy because the Pacers did not make the finals. Because I'm sure David Stern was like, "How are we going to market a Pacers Spurs NBA Finals?" He's probably like, "Let's just have the Spurs sweep the Pacers 4 games. We'll call it quits." But LeBron, you know, his hero made it, and it's, you know, looks like a Heat repeat because I don't think the Spurs are going to be able to handle LeBron and the Heat. So, you know, that's the big news right now in the NBA, and it's going to be an exciting final. I'm not saying that the Heat are going to steamroll them, but I'm thinking 5 or 6 games. I don't think it's going to go to a Game 7.
I don't know, man. The Heat, they against the Pacers, they seemed a little inconsistent. I mean, they would have like a really good game and they would have a pretty crappy game, and I don't know. I think the Spurs might have a chance.
I think it's going to be the Heat, and Trevor, you're right. I think the Heat obviously steamrolled last night. I mean, there was no questionable calls. I mean, it was a pretty much ownage of the Pacers. It seems like when LeBron's got a motive or you give him that extra little boost of motivation, I mean, he goes on a level of playing that's just ungodly. That's a word. He just comes out and he's just like legendary out there. And we've seen that last night. We've seen that night where he came out, and actually it was kind of a weird comment that he made, that he said he went back to his Cavalier playing days. I don't know if that was a jab at Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh, but he's like kind of saying that he had to take over the game that game when he hit that three from like half court. And he was just that one, I think it was a third period, a third quarter where he hit like 18 points and he was just on fire. So, man, that was a pretty good series, though. I mean, the Pacers were the one team that I think could match up with the Heat, with the big man, with Roy and everything. And exciting times for the NBA, you know, with the finals and some great products coming out hobby-wise, double rookie class. So basketball's been good this year. What do you think, Ryan? What do you think about the series coming up?
It's hard to say. It seems like they've been preparing for this for a while, because I remember there was a time when San Antonio was going to play Miami and Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker didn't show up, and then Miami comes out to San Antonio and LeBron and Wade don't show up or something like that. So I don't really, you know, San Antonio's had some time off. The one thing I will say, don't be shocked if Eric Spoelstra gets outcoached and the Spurs are able to somehow contain LeBron. The other Miami players until last night had not been playing very well in the Indiana series, aside from Bergman and a few other guys. Perhaps the role players for Miami, which is pretty much now everybody except LeBron, because Wade is a shadow of his former self, as far as I'm concerned, and will never be an elite player again, unless maybe he gets like that knee spinning thing that Kobe got, or takes some steroids or something. I'm actually being honest about that. That wouldn't be a bad idea for him. But I think this could be a really interesting series. I could see it going either way. I could see Miami just killing, like you said, Doug. LeBron could just be LeBron and just be way too athletic for San Antonio to contain with. Or I could see San Antonio doing what they normally do and play very good offense, play a very good team-style defense, and somehow get this series. So
who's going to be on LeBron? Are they going to put Leonard on LeBron? Are they going to rotate off? I mean, what do you think the strategy is going to be against LeBron?
Well, it's got to be some kind of team concept. So whether are they forcing him left? Are they forcing him to the baseline into Duncan? Who are they helping off of? You know, like Chalmers is not what you'd call a knockdown shooter. So I'd essentially be running, whoever's guarding Chalmers, I'd be running that person at LeBron almost 24/7, or trying to get LeBron where you want him, either in a corner, either going left or whatever. You know, these guys scout these games and watch videotape and all this crap. So they should have a pretty good idea. Where does LeBron, you know, is only a really good player, those spots on the floor, get him to there, get him to pass the ball to these role players who have been playing spotty, and we'll see what happens. But I don't know. LeBron's so good, and these other guys might wake up. Wade, Bosh, Haslam has been playing very well. He's a very serviceable player and can sometimes hit down, knock down jump shots. Ray Allen woke up a little bit last night. I think he hit a few, couple threes. So Chalmers is very streaky. He can be a very good offensive player at times, and then at other times he can disappear. So I don't know. We'll see. This should be a lot of fun to watch. For a basketball fan, this is going to be should be really interesting.
Well, and, you know, in most cases, I would say, you know, when they had a week and the Spurs had like a week and a half off. I'd say in most cases, I don't like the fact that they had a week and a half off, but I think for a generally older team, I think that they needed it. So, if, you know, with Parker and Duncan And Ginobili, I think having this long of a layoff to watch the tape, to watch the series, I think is beneficial to this type of team. Now, if it was the, like, say the Warriors somehow went through and beat these teams and now they're going to be in the finals, say that happened, a week and a half layoff would be the absolute worst for the for that team. But I think an older team that's been there before, they needed the layoff. So it's going to be a great series. I can't wait to watch all every game. And I wanted to kind of, still on the topic of NBA, did you guys hear about Hibbert and the $75,000 he got fined?
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I actually have a snippet. I don't know if we're actually allowed to play this, but I'm going to play it anyway. I don't have the no homo thing that he said, but I have the cuss word that he said, which actually brings up a good point about a smaller market team. So here's Roy Hibbert in the press conference right here.
Roy, you finished only 10th player of the year voting. Why do you think that's possible when you alter so many shots?
I mean, you know what? Because y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. All right? So that's fine, you know? I'm going to be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined, all right? Because, you know what, we play, we're not on TV all the time. Reporters are the ones that are voting, and, you know, it is what it is. And if I don't make it, that's fine. I'm still going to do what I have to do.
So that was in response to him getting 10th place for voting of Defensive Player of the Year, which, I mean, his stats would say that he should at least be in the top three. So he basically said, you know, we're not on TV, and – you know, you reporters are the ones who vote. He obviously used an explicative there. And then earlier in the press conference, he alluded to one of his teammates opening him up, and then he said, no homo. So that, you know, with all the gay rights activists and stuff, and, so, you know, I guess the NBA had to react with that. So those two comments got him fined $75,000. So my question is, freedom of speech, should he be fined $75,000? What do you guys think?
I think it was live, and he said, mother, whatever, he said, you know, motherfucker, can we cuss on this? Like, is that cool?
I don't know
if there's some kind of regulation on that, but I'm free, yeah. I'm cool with that word, so, I mean.
He said it, yeah.
I think, on live TV in a post, so NBA TV might have been broadcasting at that time, if there's not, like, a delay. So I think, and the networks can, I think, get fined if you're dropping MFers, like, on NBC and stuff during the news, they're going to fine NBC. So I think there's some sensitivity toward that. The other comment he made, I mean, that's just kind of dumb. He needs to tighten it up. When he gets into the interview, he just needs to tighten it up a little bit. Filter yourself. Rein yourself in. You just had a great game. They just won, right? After that, or was it the day after? They just won. Like, tighten yourself up, bro. You got a game 7 to go play. Tighten it up. Like, geez, like, there's times to be kind of funny and joke around, and then there's other times when you need to just be quiet. He's a great player, by the way. I mean, he's a very good player, excellent player. And I like his personality. But right after the game, when you're about to go play a game 7 on the road, you need to lock it up. So,
right.
I don't know.
Be focused on the game, not the reporters. I do agree. I like his outspokenness about the small market, though. I mean, maybe because I like an underdog. I like the fact that he did bring up the reason he did, probably one of the reasons was Indiana's not on TV. But, I mean, let's face it. I mean, Indiana's a good team. But they're kind of like the Giants were in 2010 to compare it to baseball. The Giants won with pitching. They weren't hitting bombs. So no one – I mean, now the Giants are on TV because they've won 2 championships and they're getting some ESPN time. But back in 2010, the Giants – I mean, no one wanted to see Lincecum, you know, win a game, 1-0. So they weren't getting the love. And that was the kind of same thing with the Pacers this year. They're winning by defense, by blocking shots, by rebounding. And it's just not as sexy for the media. So, I mean, he has a point there. I do see where he's saying that that's why he didn't get Defensive Player of the Year, but you're right. I think he should focus on Game 7 and just let his game speak on the court. Now, there is a little bit of a conspiracy theory out there that people have put on YouTube and some forums that apparently, I don't know what year it was, but LeBron said no homo in an interview. Some guy was getting the mic real close to his face, and he said, hey, man, I'm not trying to suck on that mic, no homo, and he never got fined. So people are saying, oh, David Stern loves LeBron. David Stern fined Kobe. David Stern fined you know, all these other athletes and stuff, but he's not going to find LeBron because LeBron's his, you know, meal ticket, so to speak. So, I mean, I do think it needs to be fair, but you're right. It was probably more on NBC. You know, they have to kind of appeal. They don't want to leave their lose their NBC deal, so they have to find somebody for that. Somebody has to be held accountable.
Right, so. And I think when LeBron said the comment he said, that might have been, what was that, 4 or 5 years ago, or 4 years ago or something maybe. I think with Jason Collins having come out or whatever, it has kind of raised the awareness that, you know, you need to be sensitive about that kind of stuff, especially when you're a public figure like Roy Hibbert.
Right.
It'd be one thing for us to say something. It's another thing for Roy Hibbert to say something, and then you can move up the food chain from there. You know, Chris Paul says something, Kobe Bryant says something, LeBron James says something, and while LeBron said it, I think that was a few years ago. Maybe it was like more of an informal gathering instead of after a big, huge playoff win, like when Roy Hibbert said his comment. So, should they have fined LeBron? Maybe at that time, maybe they need to better educate these athletes a little bit. And, you know, all three of us are from California. So I don't know, you know, I think we all three went to public school. So it's like, we've kind of grown up. I'm always kind of surprised when people are like either ultra sensitive to gay people or for some reason, like, put off. I don't know. I grew up with some of my friends were gay.
Yeah.
So it's like I never thought of it as like a big deal. For some reason, I guess, and for some people or in other parts of the country, I guess, it is a big deal. So I don't know. I never thought it was a big deal. People are people. I didn't wake up one day and say I was going to be straight. So,
right.
You know what
exactly.
I'm saying? It just happened.
Yeah.
In second grade, I was like, man, that girl Katie is just really cute. You know what I'm saying? That's what it was.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
No, not at all. Not at all.
I mean, were like, wow, I'm going to be straight. And, you know, you're sitting there in third grade and you're like, yeah, well, for the rest of my life, I'm going to be straight. No, you just saw a girl. She was like cute. It was like, this is what happened. So that's the way I figure. I don't know. Maybe I'm tripping. So
I think you're on to something about the California mindset, and I think we were so exposed to it with other states, and I'm not trying to be political here, but I think other states don't have it in their face as much as we do. So I think we just think it as, it's just second nature, and, you know, there's that guy, there's that guy, and you know, that's what they like. But you're right. Yeah, I mean, you choose what you like. You know, Sports Illustrated swimsuit magazine was mine. You know, it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, that's a nice-looking woman. So, yeah, you know. But everybody's so sensitive now that it's been out in the media and people suing people for things that he didn't mean anything by affecting the gay community, neither did LeBron, but it just, they're all so sensitive. Maybe 10 years from now, that's just going to be part of it. Maybe it's like the whole African-American thing all over again, but now with, you know, the gay community. So I don't know. But we do have a question in the chat about redemptions. So I wanted to bring that up. And speaking of Hibbert, his value has went up about 27% since the start of the series, according to Brandon. But Trevor
nice.
Wants to know, yeah, so his cards are going up, and I think he's a good player. He's going to be good for a while. But Trevor's asking, you know, what's up with Panini? What do they put in their contracts specifically to get these players to sign? Because Durant hasn't been playing for 3-4 weeks now, and he's not getting any redemption signed. So what do you guys think of the logistics, Ryan? I mean, as far as getting these guys to sign, it sucks about Durant because he's like their poster boy. I mean, he's one of their exclusives. They have 4 exclusives. They have Kobe, Durant, Blake Griffin, and I'm forgetting one. But they have 4 NBA exclusives, and Durant and Kobe have been redemptions. So it's like you put these guys on the box, you put these guys on the box, and then it's a redemption. It's a bummer. So do you think that they put need to have cards signed by this amount of time, or, you know, what do you think?
Right, and that can be very frustrating. But there could be multiple reasons. One of the reasons is a lot of guys they want to sign everything at once.
Ah.
So they don't, because, you know, as we all know, these card sets come out all year, and there's autographs of Kobe and, you know, pretty much every product. But Kobe doesn't want to have 15 signing sessions each year. Okay? So in order to get some of this stuff on card, there will have to be redemptions because Kobe wants to sign it all at the end. You know what I'm saying? When it's, okay, hey, tell me when you guys have put out all your products, or let's do two signing sessions. I'll do one for you at the All-Star game. We'll get all that stuff. We'll get those nine products there, and then call me after the season, and we'll get those done there. I think Sandy Koufax. Sandy Koufax was a redemption a couple years ago, and that I heard that was the exact reason. He likes to sign everything at once. Ken Griffey Jr., another example, he was a redemption last year in Topps. I don't know if those have been fulfilled. I think they have, or some of them have. So maybe not at once, but at only, you know, they don't want to have 20 signing sessions. So that is probably one of the reasons, at least for those spokesman guys, maybe those high-end guys, they can't sign, you know, something every month. It just doesn't work out in their schedule. These guys, I think collectors can understand that too, by and large, that these guys are, you know, training and on, you know, in demand for the entire year, practically. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on these guys. I'm sure, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Durant because he hasn't won a title yet. And then Lord knows how much pressure was on LeBron before he won last year. I mean, my God. So to get them to sign 20 different times during the season, it's just not happening at all. So that's probably one reason. Specifically with Durant, I would bet a lot of money. That's the reason why. So you really just have to wait. But the fact that they do have that deal with Durant, I think it can make you feel good that you are gonna get that item. You just might have to wait a little while, unfortunately.
That's very true. And I think maybe in the future, I know it's probably hard, but I know these guys do have publicists and people that schedule things for them. Maybe they could come up with a time frame for these, you know. I don't know. Maybe Panini doesn't want you to know it's going to be 7 months because they don't want people pissed off. But maybe say,
right,
hey, Durant has committed that, you know, June 10th through June 15th, he's going to be signing 50,000 cards. So, well, they probably don't want to put that amount out either. But, you know, it would be nice at some point to give collectors a time frame of when these things are going to be signed. I don't know how much work or effort it takes to be put in. But, I mean, I'm sure they paid Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant a lot of money for these autographs. So it would be awesome if their publicists could say, hey, Kobe's going to freaking his vacation home this weekend and he's planning on spending a whole day signing some autographs or something, or, you know, something that keeps people updated. I mean, with social media, it would be so easy to just say, hey, Kobe's letting you know that he's signing these things.
Right. A signing update.
Right.
That you know.
And it actually might be better for Panini because I think more often than not, the collector is blaming Panini for not getting the auto. So I think the collectors are like, come on, Panini, when it's in fact really Panini has sent him the cards. The cards are probably sitting in a box at his house for 3 months. They're sitting there waiting to be signed. It's not Panini didn't make the cards and didn't get them to him. It's the opposite. So, I mean, Dan, what do you think? What do you think could improve on, you know, making these redemptions?
I think you guys are on the right page. I think it is. I think Ryan's dead on. I think more often than not, it is guys who are like, I want to sign once a year. I don't want to have to sit here and do this all through the season or through my off season workouts. Like, since he is an exclusive to them, he probably in his contract states that he is going to do one signing a year and get everything out of the way. And I think that's more often than not the reason why you see redemptions. And especially it's those guys who have the pull. I mean, those guys who are kind of the poster guys for certain products and certain manufacturers, in their contract probably states that they're only going to sign once a year, and it's based on when they are available to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and, that's a good point. Yeah.
Right. But yeah. I think Ryan's dead on with that.
Or, I mean, maybe they don't plan out sets far enough in advance, but maybe they could. If they plan the sets out far enough in advance, they could take this time. And maybe they do that. Maybe they have them sign 5 or 6 sets right now. But if they plan out the set far enough in advance, maybe just make one design for – they know they're going to do limited basketball next year. So make that one design that they know for Kobe and, you know, Durant, and send those out when they have that window of him signing. So maybe they already do that. Like I said, maybe they already do that. But then, you know, they obviously they make Prism. They didn't think they were going to do Prism or Select. And maybe they have to add it on later. So I'm sure there's a lot of that going on too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky thing. I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, I know it sucks for us collectors, but trying to get autographs from guys like during their season, these guys have a lot of things on their mind, and signing cards is probably not in the top 10.
Yeah,
they're probably worried about a million other things. So, I mean, you know, it's not Panini's fault. Panini can't, like, go up to him and go, you know what, you're either going to sign these cards or we're just going to pull you out of the product. I mean, a lot of the players at that point, they've already got huge contracts. They're like, whatever. Like, I don't need to be in this. I don't need to do this.
Yeah, and let's face it, some of these guys, you know, went through school without having to really focus on education a whole lot. I'm not saying that they're uneducated. Well, in a way, I guess I am. So a lot of them probably didn't do a lot of homework. They probably didn't put a lot of effort. They were just playing sports. So having to sit down and sign something for 8 hours, that's work. That's work that they're not used to. Their work is going out there and shooting hoops, throwing a football, swinging a bat. So having to put in 8 hours of work, they're going to find every reason to not. They're going to find every reason to make a public appearance somewhere, donation, charity. And, I mean, most of them aren't like that, but I'm sure there is some that are like that. They're like, oh, man, I just got finished with my season. I'm going to take 2 months off. I'm going to go to Hawaii. I'm going to go visit my family. And the cards sit there because it's work. Who wants to do work?
Yeah.
So, you know, one point in the chat is that there is really hardly any hockey redemption. So I don't know what the difference is with hockey. This year there's redemptions because of the rookie class. But for whatever reason, hockey seems they figure it out. Those guys sign.
That is a good point. That is a good point that I haven't really actually thought of. That is a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, and their season's just as long as basketball.
They make a lot of money, too. I've seen some hockey contracts. I'm like, good Lord, guys making $10 million a year. And these long contracts, like some guy got an 8-year contract. So I think and their autographs are nicer. I mean, you guys open more stuff than I do. But I look at some of the hockey products and sets and stuff and cards on eBay. I'm like, wow, these guys take their time signing. And you know, at least some of them do. And they have really nice autographs. Some of them have longer names because they're not American or whatever. But really interesting stuff, and that's an interesting point they're making, that there are less redemptions in hockey. I don't know why. I mean, in America, I guess, I mean, they're not as big as stars, but in their own world, in the hockey environment, these guys are like Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby and some of these guys, and the guys are boys that are playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. There's a lot of attention on that. A lot of interest in that.
The only way
I don't know what it is.
Maybe less releases. I mean, I don't think there's as many hockey releases as there are basketball releases. So they're not really asking the players to do as much.
But I think
usually there's a couple more basketball releases than there are hockey releases.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. Ryan's right. The autographs, there's nicer looking autographs. What would you, you know, before we, actually, this is a perfect transition into anthology, so we will go into that next. But what do you think? Rank the sports. Out of the four major, baseball, basketball, football, and hockey, rank it from 1 to 4 best autos in general.
Like
legibility?
Right, just, legibility, what you think, you know, what you would think of a guy taking time on his auto, as opposed to like a Vern Morency or a Michael Agnew auto. Which sport
this
do you
recommend? This question might have deeper meanings. This question might have deeper meanings, you know, because
I
really make some profile.
I think it does. I think Doug's about ready to get fined. We're gonna find out if you can actually get fined on Blog Talk Radio.
I actually wasn't.
You know the problem? You know the problem with the Vernon Morency situations where they're just signing their initials is because they're making these guys at like the premiere, and we saw it when we were there. These guys have to sign a ton of stuff in such a short window. And I would just sit down with some 1990 Topps cards and try to sign 1,000 cards yourself in that perfect, like you were writing a check. Like you were writing, you know, you wanted to have your perfect signature. So you sit there and write your perfect signature for 1,000 autographs. That could take a long time, and your hand might start hurting a little bit, you know, like you have that little video game cramp or something. Dan, you might have had that in Vegas. Your hand, like, when you're playing, like, Mario Kart. I don't know. I just think it's tough when they're making them sign too many autographs at one time.
Yeah, I do hear you there. That does, yeah. And, I didn't even think about the racial or IQ aspect of it, but you know what would be interesting is to take the Wunderlich score and compare the auto. Because I can tell you this much. Ryan Fitzpatrick probably has an amazing-looking auto because he scored a 50 on the Wunderlich. Now,
I think we've pulled a Ryan Fitzpatrick auto, and he does have a good-looking auto.
It's like art in motion. Andrew Luck, nice-looking auto. Robert Griffin, nice-looking auto. Frank Gore, not a nice looking auto. CJ Spiller, well, CJ Spiller's not bad, but that would be an interesting aspect to compare the Wunderlich. That would probably cause some controversy, but maybe some good press out of it. But compare the Wunderlich score to the auto. So
well, let's talk about Agnew real quick. So I don't think it has anything to do with him being smart or not. I think it's the fact that he signed like 50,000 stickers, and I mean, that guy, there's a reason why you see so many of his cards and products is because I think he just signed more than everybody else.
Yep.
It was like the
right.
year before that, it was like Jordan Todman, and he was like, I mean, at the premiere, that guy probably signed at least 10,000 stickers. So I mean, that's why you see, I mean, Michael Agnew, his first couple pages of stickers that he was signing were probably pretty nice. And then by page 180, he was like, dude, I'm cramping up. I'm tired. I'm thirsty. The sun's beating down on me. I got to go learn a playbook. And maybe that's why he didn't get on the field, because he was too busy signing autographs and couldn't learn the playbook.
And they're sitting there in full pads. They're sitting there in full pads in the outdoor. And granted, they're under a tent, so they're in the shade. But there were no fans over there, so it could potentially be upwards of 90 to 100 degrees in full pads, full NFL gear, signing these damn autographs. It just doesn't. I could see where the guys get lazy. That's where the employees have to step in and say, "No, no, Mr. Agnew, we're paying you. You're going to sign it like this, because look, I have an example when you were signing stuff in college and your transcript and blah, 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 and the checks you signed. Look, you have a beautiful autograph. You're going to sign them like these. I'm going to pay you $1.25 per autograph to sign them like this, not EG or whatever, however you were signing." So some of the responsibility goes to Panini and Topps for putting these guys in full pads signing 500 autographs at the Rose Bowl when it's 90 degrees outside. So there's a little bit of problem there.
Well,
yeah,
I just dug a little deep. I just searched the interwebs here, and the lowest scores for this year's draft class was Cordarrell Patterson. I know you guys are shocked. I know you're shocked.
I'm not sure what you're doing. You know it. Hey, my boy in the middle at the 50-yard line right there now. Y'all ain't even know it, though, but he played with San Fran. Okay, get it. Hey, look. Okay.
That's what he was doing at the rookie premiere. So he scored an 11 on his Wonderlic score, which some may say is kind of an outdated intelligence IQ test. What it is it's, if you're not familiar with the Wonderlic, if you're listening in, it's a 50-question, and they give you 15 minutes, and it's mostly common sense. Like if a train traveled at, you know, this speed for 2 miles, what time would it arrive? So it's a kind of a common sense. So mostly quarterbacks do score the highest on that. I mean, because I don't know what the theory is behind that. But along with Cordarrelle Patterson, Tavon Austin scored a 7. So there you go, Dan, your boy.
No. You say a 7?
7, yeah.
And Patterson scored an 11?
And it scored an 11, yeah.
So Austin had the worst.
Austin and Patterson combined. I mean, there was no one, I guess there wasn't really anybody close. So in comparison, the highest score was Ryan Nassib with 41.
Oh, gee. He probably studied for like 3 weeks on that. And Tavon and Cordell were probably like, dude, we're wide receivers. What the hell do we need to take this stupid test for? I'm going to go in there, blow this off, check my highlight. Honestly, Cordell Patterson has a this is going to actually go back to the Roy Hibbert discussion. Cordell Patterson has a great physique. I would love him on my team because he's a huge guy. If you can put him in the right spot, he's smart. He's got to be intelligent enough to, hey, run this route, this, to get, you know, the kid could be very good because he has he's going to be a tough guy to tackle. He was one of the biggest guys there, aside from E.J. Manuel, and even Deion Jordan. Like, Cordell Patterson was bigger than Deion Jordan, the third pick in the draft, the defensive end for the Dolphins, I believe. I think he was the third pick. I mean, Cordell Patterson is a big boy. So, how long do you think Ryan Nassib studied for the Wonderlic?
Yeah.
Like, let's be real.
Yeah, he was prepared. I hear you. The next score,
well, I think quarterbacks like look at it as they're like, because I think quarterbacks are like, oh, I need to score high on this because they do critique me on this Wonderlic, where running backs and receivers, I don't, obviously, Tavon Austin scored a 7, and the Rams picked him, they traded up to get him. So, obviously, the Rams didn't look too far into it.
Well, here's some scores. I have the rest of the scores for the last 3 years. You got Matt Barkley got a 30, E.J. Manuel 28, Landry Jones 28, Mike Glenn 26, Tyler Bray 24, Geno Smith 24, Zach Dysert, 24, Matt Scott, 22, Tyler Wilson, 20. Then you go to the 2011, Greg McElroy scored a 43, so he got the highest out of all the quarterbacks. He's a guy from the Jets, if you're not familiar with him. He played like one game last year. Blaine Gabbert, 42. Colin Kaepernick, our boy, 37. Christian Ponder, 35. Ricky Stanzi, 30. Andy Dalton, 29. Ryan Mallett, 26. Cam Newton, 21. Jake Locker, 20. And then you move on to the most recent last year with the big three. Andrew Luck had the highest score of 37. That's a Stanford guy. Ryan Tannehill, 34. Kirk Cousins, 33. Brandon Whedon, 28. Russell Wilson, 28. Kellen Moore, 26. Brock Osweiler, 25. And RG3, 24. So,
all those high scores were all quarterbacks.
But I mean, those are just quarterbacks. I thought you were gonna
want some running backs, dude. I want some receivers.
Well, the 5 lowest Wonderlic scores of all time, Oscar Davenport from North Carolina scored a 6. And that was a 1999 draft. He got a 6. Frank Gore got a 6. Edward Pig Prather scored a 5, who was a touted running back out of Mississippi. Morris Claiborne scored a 4, tied for first place. And Darren Davis from Iowa scored a 4. So you don't know. I mean, some of these guys could have just been like, man, I'm just going to start filling in these bubbles. You know what I mean? I mean, you might get that, you know.
it's also, what, it's 50 questions in 15 minutes?
I believe it's 15. I'm not sure. I can't find the exact time. I did a mock Wunderlich, and I think I got like a 33. But
wow.
No one, yeah. So
I'm, well, Doug's good. Doug's a genius.
So I don't know if it was a great Wunderlich. You can do a search if you guys are. It's actually a 15 question you do in like 5 minutes or something like that. So they don't actually have a 50 question one that I took. So they just probably average your right answers. But if you search Wunderlich on Google, you could do like a test, you know, Wunderlich and see how you score. It times you and everything. So it's kind of interesting. So, but, you know, Frank Gore obviously still has a great career, right? I mean, he scored one of the lowest. So
that guy's
awesome. I mean, yeah.
I mean, how much does that figure in? I mean, I guess you could say the quarterbacks need to think on their feet a little bit better, so it's probably only prevalent for quarterbacks. I don't know why they have running backs take it. I mean, the playbook is not very big for a running back as it is for a quarterback. Quarterback's going to need to know all the plays. Running back needs to know the plays he's going to run and blocking schemes and things like that.
Yeah, but I would say, like, linebackers would probably have to score pretty high as well. I mean, that's a lot of thinking, a lot of problem solving. I mean, they gotta know basically what the offense is doing. They gotta know what the defense is doing. I mean, they gotta think. They have to be quick on their feet as well. So you figure linebackers should score pretty well.
Yeah, or maybe even a safety or something. Somebody that's, you know, some of these safeties that are captains that are calling plays. Some of these guys should have good Wunderlich scores, you would think, as well. You know, some of these defenses, safeties are really involved in moving the secondary and getting involved with the linebackers. So, yeah, that's a good question. That's a good point, Brandon. Let's test the coaches. Let's see who's the smartest coach on the Wunderlich.
Exactly. Test some of those idiots, and we'll see how if they want to make fun of Cordell and Tavon Austin. And, you know, I guarantee one of those two guys will be a great player. And Frank Gore, I mean, what, will he score a six? I mean, I don't think anybody who's watched Frank Gore would consider him a dumb player. I can't even, like, remember a time where, like, wow, that was really dumb. I'm sure he's had some bad fumbles or just – but, I mean, the guy's a very good pass protector. They can't even – I mean, you can't take him off the field, really, because he does a lot of things well. So I think, like Dan was saying, it's very important for quarterbacks that you could see how it could translate to a playbook, to calling an audible, running a two-minute no-huddle situation – that you have to have that kind of boom, boom, boom kind of thought process. Whereas with Tavon, Cordell, Frank Gore, these other guys, I'm looking more at their body and, like, what are their highlight tape? What are they, you know, show me that.
Right.
And then as opposed to – but with the quarterback, you know, I think it is important to kind of know what grade, you know, hey, what were their grades? Why don't they ever talk about that? I mean, I guess maybe that's not public information, but it'd be interesting to know that stuff, too.
Yeah, Donovan McNabb scored a 14. Cordell scored a 14. Jeff George got a 10. Jeff George from back in the day. So I'm just looking over quarterbacks. Dan Marino scored a 15. So, I mean, obviously we know what Dan Marino did in his career. Troy Smith scored a 15. John David Booty scored a 14. So, yeah, I mean, a lot – besides Dan Marino, the guy – the bottom – Vince Young scored a 15. So, you know, Dan Marino obviously defied it. I wonder what Brett Favre's score was. I'm trying to go through here. This is all on the fly. But and to back up Frank Gore, I'm going to preface this by saying I'm a big Frank Gore guy, but I think he suffered – I forget what they said. I think he – it's not dyslexia – but he has a learning disability where he has to, like, you have to show him or he has to see it to learn it. So by putting something on a paper, he struggles with it. So that's why they said it was that's why he didn't do well on the Wunderlich. So
I think Tess is stupid. Dan, you remember those? You ever remember, Dan, back in the day, you just would circle in the bubbles or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what you guys used to do? Like, you take, I can't remember what those tests were called. Not that you wouldn't do it on the SAT, but those little stupid tests they would make you take, and you'd have to fill like 100 questions in the bubbles. By the time you're ready for recess, like, you're just filling in bubbles at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Just a number two pencil.
Yeah.
So.
Well, pretty much. You're just, like, going through and, like, you've already answered about five of them, and it's, like, 50 questions. You're like, ah, crap, I'm just going to do B. I'm going to get, I'll get at least, like, seven or eight of them, right?
Well, actually, that reminded me of a time back in, me and Dan went to high school together, and there was a, kind of, it wasn't SAT, but it was like a CTBS kind of test or something that they had us do. So they gave us 2 hours to do this thing, right? And, you know, once you're done, you can go. So we put that we spoke Lao, and we actually just filled it in 5 minutes. We just walked out. So, you know, that might be what these guys do. Hey, man, I got to be somewhere. I'm doing this Wonderlic. It doesn't matter. Boom, 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 I'm out. So, I mean, there could be some of that going on, too.
Well, I mean, they brought us in there, and I mean, this is public school right here, but they bring us in there, and they're like, okay, you have 2 hours to get this done, and if you get done early, you can do whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So this doesn't have any this has no reflection on my grade? No, it's just to see if, like, our school's going to get more money. I'm like, whatever,
cool.
I'm out of here in 6 months anyway. I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
Well, let's get into some hobby with some Rookie Anthology. Rookie Anthology is coming out. It's a well-anticipated release for hockey because of the lack of hockey releases. We talked a little bit about it last week. I actually pulled up the checklist here on sportscardradio.com, looking at some of the pictures.
Is it up?
Great. Yeah.
I didn't do it. Somebody else must have been working on my site. Sorry, my brother.
a really good checklist. I mean, there's a lot of great legends and veterans in the checklist. I mean, you got the Crown Royale rookie silhouettes that just look amazing. They're on-card autos, at least from the picture I could see here. So they brought that back. I've always been a fan of that in any of the sports. I believe they do it football. Yeah, they do it football, basketball, and hockey. And I'm sure they'll probably bring it to baseball eventually because they do that. I love the look of those cards. The big catch cards are going to be the prisms. They're going to throw in that 3-card prism pack in every Rookie Anthology box that will have the red parallels, the gold parallels, the black parallels. And those are going to be on fire because it's just been anticipation. I can't see this product going down with the checklist that they have. I mean, you got Nugent in there. You got anybody that you would want. Obviously, you can't have Gretzky because he's a Upper Deck exclusive. But everybody else that you'd want, even the guy that's even Torrey Krug, who's been like lighting cards on fire, he's in there. And you got the aspiration rookies in there, the die cuts. You got, I mean, it's a pretty thorough set. They got the luxury suite memorabilia autos, Sedin, Gilmore, Balfour, Gordie Howe. I mean, Luke Robitaille, yeah, Mario Lemieux. I mean, it's a really deep checklist that I think they've been just throwing. Like Andrew said in last week's show, they're throwing in the stuff that they were made, like titanium that they pushed off. They said they're not going to make it. They put it in this set. So I know we got a break. We actually got a really cheap 4-box random tomorrow for $17. Gets you a spot. It's on early bird sale right now. It's normally $19. It gets you a team, and it's 20 hits for that break. Plus, we have a half-case team style tomorrow, so that's going to be pretty cool. I'm trying to find if anybody got this stuff early so I could see some pictures of some of the cards. I'm going on blowout cards. That would be the place where everybody breaks early and see if there's anything going on. Doesn't look like anybody's gotten any early, so that's a good thing. But I'm excited for some anthology tomorrow. It's going to be a nice, refreshing new thing. It's, you know, not like all the rest that have came out in a while, so I can't wait. Yeah,
how many packs? It's like 10 packs, 4 hits? What's the...
It's 4 hits, but they're saying that there are going to be a lot of boxes that have 6 or 7. I think there's... Correct me if I'm wrong in the room here, guys. I believe it's 3 hot boxes a case. So you're bound to get a couple hot boxes tomorrow that'll have 6 or 7 hits in there. So,
right.
So I'm pretty excited about it. I can't wait to open it tomorrow. The team style breaks, we slashed them. So if you want to get a cheap team tomorrow, I think there's some teams in a half case for like $16-15. So, and you get all the base. So even if you don't get a hit, you're going to get base cards. You're going to get, maybe you get a prism out of the prism pack. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. Let's go ahead and move into the National. 2013 National Sports Card Collector Convention is right around the corner. It's this year, July 31st to August 4th in Chicago at the Donald Stevens Center. If you're new to the hobby or you've been under a rock or out of town for a while and you haven't heard of this, it is the epic convention. It's the can't-miss convention. This is where you want to go. Everybody who's anybody is there. If you want to buy singles, you'll find anything. If you need anything, you'll find it there. If you can't find it there, then there's something wrong. You'll find it there. If you need something to build your set, if you're looking for a certain autograph, if you're looking to buy lots, if you're looking to buy boxes, DA Card World, blowout cards, they're all there. And I heard they just blowout will just sell some stuff for just nothing. They'll just have stuff like way under cost. Some older stuff, if you like older stuff, blowout will just be like just, I mean, nothing. Just killing it out there. So, and they announced the autograph guests. I mean, they've been announcing it over the last, you know, since they put the site up. But they actually put their prices up. And, man, I mean, it's a anybody who's anybody there. They've got everybody there for baseball. Reggie Jackson, Alomar, Bench, Jermaine Dye, Eckersley, Ricky Henderson, Justice, Frank Thomas, Pete Rose. Well, Pete Rose signs everything. Brett Saberhagen, Steve Garvey, Roger Clemens is there. He's going to be a big ticket item. He doesn't sign a lot of things. He'll be there. Brandon Webb, Tommy Lasorda, Johnny Damon, football, Fouts, Greasy, or Bob Greasy, Dan Hampton, Bart Starr, Lawrence Taylor, Mike Ditka, the Bears, Troy Smith, Terry Baker, Frank Gifford, basketball, Jerry Lucas, Chris Mullen, Damian Lillard will be there. If you can't get Damian Lillard autographs in Panini, you can get an 8x10, or maybe you can bring your Panini card to get signed. Hockey, Bobby Hull, Tony Esposito, got boxers, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roy Jones, Larry Holmes, you got jockeys there. You got Steve Koff and Ron Sirkot. There'll be probably some surprise guest appearances there. If you get the $279 pass, which gives you the all access, you get first in line. You can get there 30 minutes early, and I believe you get 18 autographs with the package that you don't have to pay for. So I'm gonna go ahead and hand it over to you, Ryan, and you talk about. You were at the 2012 National in Baltimore. Tell me, just give me an overall, like a quick walkthrough of the event and maybe some strategies on what people should do if they're going to either buy or maybe build sets.
Okay, yeah, I think strategies, you'd have to, first of all, everybody should go. Like if you, I mean, my God, it was one of the highlights of my year last year. And I try to go on vacation a lot and do a lot of stuff and go places, go to sporting events. But literally last year, the National, it was one of the highlights of my year. I had a freaking blast. If you can go out there, I think it's July 31st through August 4th. This year, Doug, you might have the dates.
Yeah, you're exactly
right. They do
a
pre-VIP day. Like, see, you can get in. They have it in like a little pre-day, I think on that Wednesday, the 31st, if I'm not mistaken, and you can get in early out there in Chicago for about 4 or 5 hours before anybody else if you have a VIP ticket. I'll talk about that in a second. What are the dates, Doug?
It's August 31st to – or I'm sorry, July 31st to August 4th.
Okay. It's right by the O'Hare Airport, I believe. It's the Rosemont Convention Center. You're a little far away from the action in Chicago. You're a good, I want to say, 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes from kind of the nightlife downtown, depending, I guess, on traffic or if you take public transportation and stuff. So if you're going out there, but honestly, quite honestly, if you get there in the morning when the National opens and you stay all day, you're not going to have a whole lot of energy to go out at night unless you're a real kind of high-energy person. What to expect, it's just a mat. And here's the special thing about Chicago is that the dealers love it. The people who organize the National love Chicago. It's going to be a stop that they're going to make every other year. So they'll go to Chicago next year. I think they're going to Cleveland. And after that, they're going to come back to Chicago because the dealers love Chicago. It's close. There's a lot of East Coast, Midwest dealers. They have big shows in Chicago anyways. There's a big Sun-Times show. There's even a show that I'm going to go to a few days before that'll probably have a good mix of the dealers. But the National show is just a huge, just massive. I mean, it would take you, it would take you hours just to kind of walk past all the booths, let alone if you dig in and you start looking at stuff, spend time talking to people. I think there are a number of different things you could do if you're looking there. Like Doug was pointing out, all the autograph guests they have, maybe some of those interest you, maybe some of those don't. Don't worry, because you could sit there at the 10 cent a card box, 25 cent a card box, and do that. You could look at all the memorabilia that's on display, Babe Ruth autographed baseballs that look like they had ink dripping off of them, but they were real. I mean, it was 100% authenticated, everything. I mean, Jackie Robinson game used jersey, boom, right there in front of you. Those black swamp cards they had on display last year. I mean, these 1900 cards that were all like PSA 9, PSA 10. I mean, they would look like fresh out of the pack. I mean, just some amazing things on display. You could get your autographs authenticated there by JSA or PSA DNA. You could get your cards graded there, and then you could literally get your cards graded at BGS last year in Baltimore, turn around and see if Brian Gray wanted to buy them. I mean, that's the one place you want to go, because I think he strategically sets himself up right close to BGS. So just go walk over there when Brian Gray's over there and just watch people try to sell home cards. I mean, that's the worth the price of admission just right there. A lot of fun there. He will, like, throw cash around. You'll see some amazing cards because guys know that he just doesn't buy crap. Like, he wants to buy the good, you know, the good stuff, the hot autograph, you know, BGS 9-5. I mean, the hot Andrew Lux. And I saw a Trevor Bauer 101 Super Fractor BGS 9-5 last year. The guy didn't want to sell. Trevor Bauer was a little hotter last year. I mean, the thing was amazing. So it's just so worth it. All the companies have a booth there. They're doing wrapper redemptions. They're doing promotions at their booth. Tops, they do actually. Here's a big, big key thing. If you go, you want to go by the Tops booth. I think that first or second day, they're going to have a sign-up sheet because they go up into one of the conference rooms. I hope they do it again this year. They've done that, I think, for several years in a row. They go into one of the conference rooms and have an like a collector discussion, like you'd see at the summit or, you know, one of those things where it's just a bunch of Tops employees and they just field questions from the people who had signed up on the sheet. But you got to make sure you sign up on the sheet. Very important to do that because that was well worth it. And kudos to them for doing that because I think the other companies could do that. And I think there could be even – I think in the past they've done tutorials, how they grade cards, things. They could have a little bit more. I think the card companies could do a little bit more instead of trying to sell their stuff and kind of push their stuff. Do a little more one-on-one interaction since they all have a ton of employees there. But that's getting a little off topic. It's really a great event for collectors because you could go there with any amount of money as long as you get in the door. You can go there with any amount of money and have a great time. And now, should you buy VIP? I would buy VIP if I was going to stay the whole time. So I'm going to be there the whole shebang. So I might pick up a VIP package. I'm going to get in through the media way, but I may even just pick up a VIP package because you're getting the free autographs. You're getting the free stuff from Topps, which has value. If you're a Check Out My Cards person, oh, man, they usually have they had an incredible special last year. Like, don't send anything to Check Out My Cards until you hear about their national special. Like, literally, that's what I'm doing. I'm not going to send anything until I hear about this special. They usually do big things and hook it up fat, like you can get stuff submitted on site for half off. So there's another aspect there. There's so many aspects. Whether you like hockey, vintage stuff, graded stuff, autograph stuff, memorabilia, whatever you want, it's there in Chicago for you. So I would highly recommend going out there. Anybody, I'm glad you guys are coming out there because it's just a great atmosphere, happy, fun times, collecting. It's not like the doom halls over in New Orleans and the summit and these arrogant, like, uptight fucking idiots. I'm going to cuss on here. Fucking idiots. It's fucking a great time in Chicago. Happy times, collectors being happy, buying stuff, selling stuff, just having a great time. So this is one of the best experiences I've had in a long, long time going to Baltimore. And from what everybody was telling me, they were like, dude, watch Chicago. Dude, if you had a great time, wait till it goes to Chicago. So I can't wait. I'm counting down the days. Contact me if you need any more information. However, via any of the channels. I'm always down to help people out, get them to the national, whatever it takes, because it's a great time, big event for the car collecting community.
Yeah, and if you're not familiar with the website, you can purchase the tickets at nsccshow.com. They have the different levels of the ticket packages, which I just brought up. You could literally get in one day for $20. That doesn't give you any of the special VIP stuff. You get the VIP package, and then you get the super VIP package. So if you get the VIP package, you get the 18 free VIP signers, which is Larry Brown, Jeff Reedon, Ralph Garr, Jerome Walton, Pat Listach, Eric Davis, Mel Renfro, Gary Peters, Gary Beeman, Ed Olchick, Murray Bannerman, Ronnie Bull, Jack McDowell, Rick Monday, Lamar Hoyt, Milk Pappas, and Ron Kittle. So those are all free with the Super VIP. Now, you can also do something if you want to be a baller and you want to try to get every autograph. So if your intention is just to get autographs, you can actually go on TriStar's website, purchase a platinum pass for, like, I think it's like $670, right? So that's in addition to the Super VIP. And what that gets you, you get a free Roger Clemens autograph out of that. So I think Roger Clemens alone is like $200 if you were to get him to sign something. And you get first in line over everybody. So the super VIP would get first in line over a regular person. So if you want to purchase a super VIP, then you get in a separate line, and you get in line over everybody else. But if you go the platinum pass and you want to try to get every autograph that's there, or, you know, the lion's share of these good autographs, go to the TriStar site, purchase the $670 thing, and you'll probably literally not have to wait very long for any of these guys. But that's baller status. Now, I don't know if there's that many people. Now, if there's, you know, thousands of people that do that, actually, I think they're limiting it to 200. So the most you could actually ever have to wait behind is 200 people if you get this platinum autograph pass. And that's if you're searching for 8x10s or, you know, these guys have different prices for jerseys and flats and cards and inscriptions and stuff like that. So, and that's all on the TriStar site. Every price is broken down on what guys charge and things like that. So, but that kind of, we're actually going to, if any of you guys are listening and you guys want to, we're going to have a private party. Mojo Break and Layton Sports Cards are teaming up to have a private party. I just kind of want to say thanks to people that participate in our breaks and you know, you guys that listen as well. We're going to be doing a dinner and some drinks, and we're going to have some gift bags that will include cards. We'll have some nice raffles and stuff like that. So if you're going to be in Chicago, we haven't announced the date. We're thinking either Friday or Saturday night. It won't be actually at the National, but it'll be really close. We're still scouting locations. So look towards that if you guys want to kind of just hang out. And that was our goal, is just kind of, for one, soak it all in. This is Mojo Break, me and Dan talking. Soak it all in and then just meet some of the people that have, you know, been around that we haven't ever met face-to-face. They've heard our voice on the stream, but they've never actually seen us. We've never met them, so we want to do that. That's kind of our goal this year, rather than have a corporate booth or whatnot. So
that's a good plan. You know what? That's a really good plan for you guys, because honestly, if I couldn't imagine having a booth there, because I'd hire some probably attractive female to just stand there and be like, here, pass out whatever the hell I'm trying to promote, because I got to go look at this stuff. I got to go see these jerseys. I got to go see if I can buy some cards or go to blowout booths. You know what? And even on my – I hate to promote myself here, but even on my YouTube channel, Sports Card Show, my brother and I's YouTube channel, I did a bunch of videos from last year's National. Like, you might be able to search on my, like, 2012 NSCC. I took a 7-minute video of blowouts booth, the baseball cards exchange booth, DA Card Rolls booth, Panini's booth. Topps booth was really small. It wasn't even really a booth, so I didn't, like, get it all into that. Benchwarmer booth, oh, fantastic display they have over there. So if you want to kind of get a little snapshot of hey, what do these booths look like? How many boxes did Blowout bring? And you're right, Doug. I mean, they bring a lot of stuff. And, yeah, like some on that, the lower-end retail stuff, or some older stuff. Oh man, yeah, you could get blasters there. Like speaking of like retail, you get blasters there sometimes for like $3. Of stuff that you'd actually want to open though.
Yeah.
I remember I got some stuff last year. I've actually bought quite a few boxes that I was like, you know what, I just kind of want to open this because it's hella cheap. So lots of great booths there. You wouldn't have to have any worry about spending enough time there. I could easily see spending 3 or 4 days there, any type of collector, because they easily go through that for 3 or 4 days. I'd highly recommend the VIP package. It gets you in early. One point I do want to make, if you're looking for, like, the Topps wrapper redemption, they always do these things where last year it was Bowman Platinum Baseball. If you opened it at their booth, they gave you the, I think, a whole Blue Wave set, which was all serial numbered or something. It was a really good promotion, like, well worth it, because the Bowman Platinum boxes were only, like, around $100, if I'm not mistaken. And you got this whole set, which was, like, 25 or 30 cards, all serial numbered. I mean, it was a great deal. You need to get the VIP package to get, or you will miss out on those promotions. You need to get the VIP because that allows you to get in early. And keep in mind, there'll be a line of about 50 dealers before you, before the VIP gets in. I'm going to try to put a halt to that this year, to be perfectly honest. There's no line over the Panini booth because they don't give away anything near as sweet as that. And I think you have to open more.
Right.
But there'll be a line of 50 dealers. Then the VIP needs to get in. Then you need to go get your Bowman Platinum box and then go get in line. So keep that in mind. If you're shooting for any kind of wrapper redemption, specifically at Topps, which I'm sure they'll do something great again, I'm not knocking what they're doing. I think the promotion's great. I mean, I almost bought a box of Bowman Platinum and did it myself. I was just mad that there were 50 dealers standing in line before anybody could get in, VIP or not. Nobody. I don't like that. I think that if collectors are traveling far and wide, and this isn't on the national show. This is on Topps. They need to control that line. And no, because it says on your badge what you are. It says if you're a VIP. It says if you're a super VIP. It says if you're media. It says if you're a dealer. So you can easily walk by and say no. Starts with VIP,
exactly.
The VIP collector guest. There are guys standing literally like almost sleeping outside. Like there were guys, I was there at like 7 in the morning and the show didn't open until like 10. These guys stood in line for like 3 hours for the Topps Redemption. I asked them what they were standing in line for last year. They're like, oh yeah, the Topps Redemption, the Bowman Platinum box.
Damn.
They were there like 3 hours early before it even opened.
Well, and I heard last year that they had like, so they had this huge line. So they had people standing in line for 4 hours, and then when they ran out, they just went to them and went, tough luck, we're out. And these guys have been standing there for 4 hours, and they're like, well, I would have liked to have known at the beginning. So hopefully they know, like, how much they have, or they can give out tickets or something so that these people just don't waste their time. And, these people were literally – I mean, there was a guy that, like I can't remember which blogger, but he was like a pretty big blogger. I think a guy that worked for like Sports Illustrated, like wrote literally a blog on how much he hated that experience because of that. He wasted like half his day standing in this line and only to be told that, you know, by the time he got up there that they were out. And it's like, you could have told me that if you counted how much you had, you could have just said, hey, you know, this is the last person. You guys, I'm sorry, you're going to have to like get out of line now. I mean, so that people can go spend their time elsewhere. I mean, these people are on vacation. A lot of people took time off of work. So hopefully they figure out a way to let these people know that they're going to be out of it. Because there's going to be – they're not everybody's going to get this. So.
Right.
But I wanted to actually move on from the national. I wanted to talk about the MLB All-Star balloting. I don't think it's going to happen, but this could be a straight mockery of the National League roster. And us three guys probably won't have a problem with it, but I could just see an outrage. Now, this is early. Obviously, the balloting just started. But what I'm talking about is Giants. Okay, so you got Buster Posey's, obviously, he's leading for the catchers. So he's leading Yadier Molina, which Buster Posey deserves to be the NL starting catcher. Now you can move on to first base. Joey Votto's winning, but Brandon Belt's second. Move on to second base. Brandon Belt is second. So you move on to second base. Brandon Phillips is winning. Marco Scudero is second. Move on to shortstop. Troy Tulowitzki is winning. Crawford second. Move on to third base. Pablo's winning, which rightfully so. Pablo's having a good season. Then you move on to the outfield.
But real quick, Scudero is having a good season.
He didn't start off good,
but that guy had like an 18 game hitting streak like a couple weeks ago, and Brandon Crawford has like put the bat together. I mean, you can make an argument; those guys have been the most consistent hitters on the team. But go ahead.
And then you move on to outfield, which they don't probably have a fighting chance. But Hunter Pence is sixth. Angel Pagan is eighth, and Gregor Blanco is 11th. So if Giants fans get their way and we all vote, could we have a starting nine that's all Giants? I mean, that would be insane. That would just I couldn't imagine the backlash of MLB. Like, everybody would just, unless you're from San Francisco, you're going to be pissed.
It could be worse, though. I mean, like, Arias can be, like, second for third base. Or, Nick Noonan's, like, third and second base. I mean, it could be worse. But Pagan's having a good season, too. Blanco is not an all-star. Pence is not an all-star.
I like Pence, but, yeah, I mean, that's obviously my opinion.
Yeah, he's not an all-star. I mean, Posey, no-brainer. Sandoval, I mean, a lot of this has to do with – see, this is a flawed system about the voting, because a lot of people, what they remember right now is what happened in late last season or into the postseason, and a lot of guys gained votes that way. Like, Sandoval is having a good year, but he hit three home runs again in the World Series, two of them against Verlander. That definitely carried over to people voting this year, because that's what they remember. They're like, I remember Sandoval winning the World Series MVP, so he's going to get votes. I mean, how many times did it happen with Bonds and Cal Ripken Jr.? Cal Ripken Jr., his final year, around the All-Star game, he was batting like .240, .250, and he got voted in to be a starter. So, I mean, it happens just based on name. I mean, name recognition, and also if you did something in the postseason the previous year, or like that kid, was it David Freese from like the Cardinals?
Yeah.
Yep.
That guy had an amazing World Series. I bet he made the All-Star team last year.
Well, he's fourth in voting this year, so for third base. David Wright is second, which, I mean, maybe I haven't looked at the stats, but I don't think David Wright is having that great of a season. So he's second.
Yeah, but he had a killer year last year.
He did. A lot of people were pissed at Pablo's voting last year was kind of laughable, because he had missed 6 weeks and he started the All-Star game. So David Wright didn't really miss any time. Pablo Sandoval wound up winning that game based on him and Melky last year, wound up winning that game for the National League, which helped the Giants. So, but Brandon Belt is – I love Brandon Belt. He's one of my favorite players, one of my favorite Giants. I don't think he should be up there in voting. Paul Goldschmidt's having a phenomenal season. Adrian Gonzalez is fourth. Freddie Freeman is fifth. And Freddie Freeman's having a good season. So it is a little bit of a flawed system. Can you vote 100 times if you figured it out? Can you vote 1,000,000 times? Probably. You know, I don't know what they can do with this voting. At least pitchers are – you're not going to have an all-Giants pitching staff, because those are voted in by the manager picks the pitching staff, correct?
Yeah. I think we have the manager, right?
Oh, we have the manager. That's true.
I think so.
Yeah.
But what's going on – well, it has a lot to do with the bigger market teams, though. I mean, I bet there's a bunch of Yankees that are up there and a bunch of Red Sox that are up there in the American League.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Reds on the National League, too. The Reds have a ton of guys. Votto, Phillips, Frazier, they're all up there. Sin Soo Chu. So let me move on to the American League, and I'll see. They're also letting people kind of vote for the Home Run Derby, like who should go to the Home Run Derby as well. So, I like that they are involving the fans, but at the same time, maybe they should kind of, you know, go with stats too, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's a right way to do it, but I just know if there's nine Giants that start, it's going to be insane. I mean, it's not going to be good. People are not going to like that, except for us that are Giants fans. And I would be pissed if I was a Net fan and, you know, my guy should have made it. I'd be pissed too. So it's kind of tough.
Yeah, I don't think they still got to take one guy from every team, right?
Yeah, I think so. Usually it's like a pitcher, though. If it, you know, it's usually a pitcher that they take. Well, it seems more often than not if you're like having a crap. Like when the A's were bad for a while, it seemed like they would just always take a Houston Street or, you know, somebody like that, like a middle reliever.
Andrew Bailey.
Yeah, Andrew Bailey. So, you know. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, exactly. I'm trying to find the ML. I'm sorry, I can't bring up the AL for whatever reason. My links are not working here, but it's probably littered with, like you said, Yankees and Red Sox.
I bet Jeter is in the top three, and he hasn't played.
Yeah, I don't know why I can't. They're just talking about the NL. Let's see if I can find the AL.
Yeah, every year you see like a guy who didn't play one game and he's like in the top five.
Okay, here's AL. Joe Mauer's catcher, he's leading. Chris Davis for the Orioles, that's well deserved. I like to see that. Robinson Cano for second, so there's your Yankee. Miguel Cabrera for third, with Manny Machado's right under him, getting some votes. Elvis Andrus for the Rangers for shortstop. Outfield is Trout.
Is Jeter on there? Is Jeter on the list for shortstop?
Yes, he's fifth in voting. Surprisingly, Jed Lowry is fourth. I mean, he's having a decent season. So you got some A's love in there. outfield is Mike Trout, Adam Jones, Torrey Hunter, Nelson Cruz, Joey Bats, Markakis, McLeod. So you got three Orioles in the top seven.
That's crazy.
Jacoby Ellsbury's ninth. Actually, not a whole lot of Yankees. Kevin Youkilis is fifth for third base. They have nobody at catcher. They have nobody in the first base vote. So Justin Pedroia is third and second base. So the designated hitter is David Ortiz is leading. So Lance Berkman, Mark Reynolds, Mark Trumbo, Victor Martinez. So. Be interesting.
Yeah.
Then we'll move on to 2013 Crap in Your Mouth Archives Baseball. We're going to go ahead and give it a quick review. Dan really didn't open it because he was enjoying his time in Vegas. I went through a case break. I don't know. I think 2013 Archives, it should have been a 2012 Archives once and done. There's just not a whole lot of value. I mean, the set's cool. It's good for set builders. That's probably the positive of it. The fan favorite autographs are selling. None of them are really selling well. They're $5, $10 autographs. So it's like one of the worst ROIs because you're going to get two autos and they're going to be probably $5 autos. So most of the time on an $80 to $90 retail box, you're going to get $10 in autos. Yeah, you're going to get a lot of base cards, maybe some SPs, but I don't like the auto selection, and then this is coming from a Giants fan. They have Mitchell and Matt Williams in there, those are awesome. Those are two awesome autos. But they threw in this heavy metal stuff, which, and I'm a heavy metal fan, but instead of making them rare, which I thought they were going to do, we got three in a case. So in a 10-box case where you do 20 autographs, we got three heavy metal autographs, and they replaced the fan favorite autograph. So you're thinking you're buying a baseball case, and you get three heavy metal autographs. Maybe I'm more pissed off because I do a group break and I want teams, you know, to come out. But I wasn't really impressed with Archives Baseball. The different years, the looks of the card, the base cards are cool. But I think from a return on investment standpoint, it missed the mark.
Interesting.
I hear that. I was watching the case you broke. And it was, it looked brutal. I mean, I wanted you to go back to the score. I think you'd opened score beforehand. I was like, it seemed like every other card was like, I literally, when you open this box of Score Football, 2013 Score Football Jumbo, I went over and looked to see how much a case would cost, because I was like, man, maybe I could send in some to check out my cards, and I could sell some of the really hot ones on eBay, and I could, do all this stuff. And it got, it got the wheels turning for about 30 seconds, but it seemed like you just kept hitting card after card after card after card that would probably sell well on the secondary market right now. There's a 101 Drew Brees. There were some other parallels. But the archives was, it just seemed boring. Not because you were breaking it. The product seemed boring. The autographs look nice, look very nice. I'd love to have 10 of them. I'd love to have a Matt Williams, a Will Clark, a Sid Fernandez. But those are $10 autos,
right,
or less, by and large. There was no star. Obviously, it is incredibly difficult to hit a huge card out of there. Incredibly difficult. It's mass produced. It's at retail. It's at hobby and stuff. So it's mass produced. The big hits are numbered 50 or less, or 20 to less. It was painful to watch because the cards were just so bad. And the heavy metal, that's such a niche audience. Never got into the heavy metal hair band thing. When I started listening to music, it was gangster rap and Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder. Like that was basically Dre, Snoop, Tupac, Biggie, Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder. I was like, that's my reference for music. Anything that happened before that, aside for some classic rock, I never got into. So I wouldn't even find one of those cards appealing. I could see how Axl Rose and Tommy Lee and some of them would have value, but if I pulled like Sebastian Bach, I don't even know who that guy is, but if I pulled that, I'd be like, oh man, who the fuck is this guy? That's a Wikipedia. So that would be one problem for me, and the cards just seemed kind of so boring. I wanted you to go back to that score case because I was like, damn, this score is like, aside the sticker autographs suck. But it is a low-end product. It is the first football set of the year. They had to get all those autographs before the draft, before they even knew who they were going to play for. So it was quite the contrast between the two products, and not just because they're different sports. But archives was really painful. I hope other people had good experience breaking it.
And maybe the one case is a small sample for me as well. And I know I'm going to get, some older set builders are going to say they loved it, and maybe I'm too new school for my comments, about what it is. And maybe that's correct. Maybe I've been, opening too much five star or Sterling where there's a lot more hits, but I just look at it from a value standpoint. I think that the ROI should at least be up to the 30% to 40%. And if you open a case, you should get $100 card minimum. And we didn't get that. So, That's why I'm giving it a crap review. Maybe I got a bad case. I'm looking at some of the autographs on eBay. Axl Rose is selling for $250 all day over or more, and they're not numbered. So that's a lot. It's a redemption. So who knows if Axel's going to sign, because Axl doesn't even make it to his own concerts half the time. So good luck with that. You might be getting another somebody else's auto in replacement for that. So. That's the only redemption that I know of. I know that Tommy Lee's live. I know, obviously, Sebastian Bach we pulled. Other than that, the high price sales, there was a Tom Seaver Topps original autograph, number to 10, that sold for $260. So they bought back a Tom Seaver card, or they're planning to because it's a redemption. They haven't bought it back for whatever reason yet. And they're going to have them sign it, and they'll stamp it to 10. So that sold for $260. The Mike Schmidt, kind of the same deal with the original, sold for the same price. So unless you pull a number to 10 card, you're really not getting anything worth of value. So if you're just going to set collect, you're probably better off buying retail of this stuff. I hate to say it. I hate to keep people out of the shop. But if you just want a snippet of what the base design is, because that's pretty much what all you're going to get in these boxes anyway, for $80 a box, I'd say just buy a couple blasters, and build your set that way, because the base sets are still in these blasters. Or wait till they go on sale. I'm sure Blowout will have blasters for like $10 at one point. So they're $20 now, but they'll probably drop to $20. So if you want to build the set, that might be the way. But these archived fan favorite autographs, there's some cool guys, but it's just there's no value. There's no value in it. Buy the singles on eBay. If you want a Matt Williams autograph, you can get one for $12. That's one of the higher selling ones. Kevin Mitchell, $12. You know, Eric Davis, you can get for under $15. So, you know, I just it was nice last year. It was refreshing that they put out a set like this. It was cool to see the old designs, but I just think that it's watered down. They're doing it again. I think it's a one-and-done set. It's maybe a set they put out every 5 or 6 years, and they load it, like load it up. Do it every 10 years, 5 years, load it up, and make value. Don't overproduce it and put it out every year. That's my opinion, if you're going to do a hobby version of it.
Week and we have one more case, right?
We do. We have one more case. We haven't decided what we're going to do. It may be going in your bubble mailers when you don't get hit for our break.
After you just trashed it, you're like, man, this. Or I kind of trashed it. I mean, they can come watch your video and make their own impression, but. I don't know if handing this out as freebies. Maybe though the thing is that second case has like really good cards in it and numbered parallels and a redemption for that hand stamp card, signs of our hands of greatness or whatever it is they have in there. And there's some good stuff. It's just super hard to get.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Maybe I should have waited to trash on it. But you know what? I don't have a filter here, so I'm going to trash on it because I didn't like it.
Well, yeah, I was going to interrupt you and go, well, just to let you know, on our shelf, we do have, like, a full sealed case before you trash it. I'm going to say, since I'm invested in it, I'm going to say I love it.
I'm the best fan. Never mind.
Doug doesn't know what he's talking about. I think it's one of the best products of the year, and it's just flat out amazing. I think I'm just going to open it all myself.
You may have to. Maybe we could do
it. No, but what I did because you opened it, I haven't even seen anything yet. But I know the previous year it was all on card autos, but I saw somebody pull a Ricky Henderson auto, and it was a sticker.
It's a number to five. They probably have some leftover stickers, is what I'm assuming. He's not a fan favorite autograph. It's like an all star autograph, and that whole set is numbered to like five.
And so, those are numbered to five, but they're all sticker autos.
Well, at least Ricky is. I don't know about the rest. There's redemptions in there too, because there's a. Somebody pulled on eBay
the fan favorite autos, were they numbered?
No.
So the on card auto, let me get this. Let me wrap my head around this real quick. So the on card autos, not numbered.
Correct.
The harder to get autos, sticker autos.
I guess you can make that point. Yes.
Good to know. All right.
I don't know if everybody else is. There's a Mike Schmidt, that's all-star autograph, that's a redemption. So I don't know if it's going to come back as a sticker or not. I mean, they probably, with Ricky, they probably, well, we got five stickers, so let's put them on this design here. We don't have to have Ricky.
I saw Ricky
on
today. I was literally 10 feet from Ricky Henderson today. They could have gave me those cards, and I could have. Ricky won't sign it unless he's getting paid, but I could, you know, put on like a Topps polo and be like, hey, Ricky, you know, here's a check for $500 from Topps. Sign these. Like, I was literally 10 feet from Ricky Henderson, so I don't. He's not a hard guy to track around. He's not a hard guy to track around. He comes to Stockton like twice a month, or well, usually like once a month for 3 or 4 days. So, come to Stockton if you need to get Ricky Henderson on card. Like,
does he work for the A's?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
He's a roving instructor for them, so he's been here the last. A couple days, and he's always in a good mood. I always hear these bad Ricky stories, how he's a jerk, and not that he's my boy, or I talk to him, or anything like that. Or I've never tried to get his autograph because I know, you know, I'm a 30-year-old man. I'm not trying to get a 50-year-old man's autograph,
yeah.
But he, you know, he just seems like he's in such a good mood. I love watching him because you can learn baseball by watching him. I mean, I could literally sit there and watch Ricky Henderson talk to people, just him talking to the players, him kind of demonstrating something, him watching the pitcher. I guess he's fascinating to watch. If Topps is listening and you need Ricky Henderson on Card Autos, then just let me know. I can facilitate and broker the deal. So.
Yeah, I know he does charge a decent amount. I think I've seen his national prices, and I think he does charge a bit. So maybe that's the holdup is he doesn't sign. I mean, and he's one of the greatest, obviously, base dealers of all time, so he's iconic. So he does charge a decent amount for his autos, and I don't know, maybe that's why they don't have a lot of his autos in stuff. If they are, they're usually pretty – they don't have base autos of Ricky Henderson. It's usually like – a print run of like 50. Like when he, I think it was in tribute this year, I don't think they were numbered any higher than 50. So
yeah,
a whole lot of his
stuff. I would say he is the best base stealer ever. Absolutely. Fun. Absolutely top of the list.
Just because he has the record?
Well, I mean, a lot of people forget Ricky can hit too. Ricky is a good player, man. Ricky is good. I just wish he was on the Giants, but he played for every other team instead.
Well, moving into a Panini baseball product that actually came out last week that we didn't do as a brick because it was the USA Champions Baseball, which I didn't really expect much from, but it's actually a nice set. They're utilizing the USA license, which Topps doesn't have anymore, and they're able to bring back a lot of guys that you wouldn't even have known played on the USA team. I'm looking at the base cards, and you got Joe Carter, prospect like Bubba Starling. Jim, I don't think they put him in the set. Jim Abbott, Frank Viola, Matt Perk. And they actually, I want to take credit for them listening to this, but they probably didn't. They have Mark McGwire and Roger Clemens autos in the set.
Nice.
So they're pretty low numbered and they're selling well, especially Mark McGwire. He hasn't had an auto for I don't know how many years on cards. So they have bat knobs in the set. They call them game gear. And I'm talking about a $75 box, right? That's retail. And you're getting three autographs and two memorabilia. So you're getting five hits, and it's probably one of the better values that's out there.
Do they have Harper and Trout? And
No Harper, I know for sure because he's a Topps exclusive.
Oh, okay.
But I am looking at, let's see here, Albert Almora, Kevin Gausman, let's see, Legends. Let's see. I'm trying to get to the old school autographs. Stars and Stripes signatures, which is where all the Ozzie Smith, Joe Carter, Wally Joyner, Will Clark, Mark McGwire, Barry Larkin, Mike Messina, Ben McDonald, Frank Thomas, Zach Green, Sean Green, Mark Mulder, Addison Russell, David Dahl, Tyler Naquin, Michael Wacha, Ken Griffey Jr., Zach Lee, Nick Castellanos, Jameson Tayon, Colton Wong, Michael Choice, Bubba Starling, Garrett Cole. So some pretty good signatures in the set.
Rafael Palmeiro? Palmeiro? No? Nope. No Palmeiro?
No, I don't see. He wasn't USA, right? He's from another country.
No. I think he played for the USA team. I think he was on the USA team when Will Clark was on the USA team.
Huh. Well, the big names are short printed. Griffey's number to 70 or Griffey's number to 100. Clemens is number to 73. Let's see some of the other. Clark's number to 250. McGwire's number to 73. Barry Larkin's number to 125. Derek Lee, number to 473. So, and they do have the red ink versions of some of these guys, like Nomar Garciaparra, Pat Burrell. Pat Burrell's in there.
Wow.
George Springer.
There's value right there. That screams value right there. Pat Burrell.
Green ink. They have Ozzie Smith. And then they have like super prospect Chris Bryant, which is, I'm not going to say he's the next Bryce Harper, but he is a huge prospect right now. And he's got relics, autos, bat knobs. He's all up in the set. So that's a guy that would, you pull his auto, I think they're going close to $80 to $100 right now in some of the shorter printed autos. This guy is one of the guys that's going to be touted in the top 10 next year's draft, I think, right? Is he coming out next year?
No, he's coming out this year. I saw him play.
Coming out this year. Yeah. Oh, is he Stanford?
He's huge. Kid's like 6'5". He's going to be good.
Wow. Wow. So he's, and then your boy Michael Lorenzen, Dan's in the set. He's got auto bat knobs and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool.
About Mark Appel.
I don't see Mark Appel in here.
That's weird. Wonder if he has a deal at Topps. Because he's been in products before, but he can't have a deal. He's in college.
Maybe that's weird. Why. Yeah, maybe that's why. Well, Chris Bryant's probably still in college, right? Or, I mean.
Yeah, and so is Lorenzen.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know the logistics of who he is.
Boris, well. Apple,
maybe.
Apple, or Apple has Boris.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So he needs money. He loves money. He pays money. So, yeah, that's probably why. Or you know, like Panini's taking the top strategy. They're not going to put all their bang in one product. You know what I'm saying? They're gonna give you a taste of their license, and then they're going to probably make a higher-end version that may have Trout, that may have Harper if they can secure it, that may have Appel. So they're probably going to put out something with these guys in there. So
Appel may be the first pick, right?
Possibly, yeah.
Possibly.
And I mean, there may be like three or four guys from Stanford who go in the first round.
Yeah, Brian Ruggiero as well.
Yeah, Ruggiero.
Wilson, Austin Wilson. It's huge. Kids bigger than Chris Bryant. I mean, Austin Wilson looks like an NBA player. I mean, my God, that kid is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stanford. Yeah. Stanford's going to have a lot of first-rounders. And the draft is coming up, what, it's like 2 days or something, right?
I think so. I think you're right. Yeah, I'm a big fan
like
of that.
June 6th or something? Something like that.
Yep. Reese McGuire's in there, too. Another guy that's pretty highly touted. So for the price point, it's good. I haven't really checked out the secondary market on some of this stuff. Actually, I can check it now. But I think it was kind of Panini's dipping their toes into the water with the USA set. I do like the value. The base cards aren't, like, amazing, but you got different colors for the legends and as opposed to the prospects and some of the guys that haven't been drafted yet. And then I got a Nick Castellanos and a Sonny Gray auto. Those are my autos. So it was pretty good value. I got like some jersey pieces of some guys that I haven't heard of, but I may hear of them soon. So it's a pretty good little set. I mean, we can't really break it because of the guys that haven't been drafted, but it's definitely a good value out there, especially if you're going into the local card store and you just want to buy some packs. I'm sure local card stores are probably doing packs at like $4 or $5, and with five hits, it's a pretty good value.
Do you guys think this will be a product that would go down? Do you guys think that? It'll actually get cheaper, or is it a product maybe they didn't make that much of that it'll kind of sell out?
I think it's going to be one of those. I think it's going to go up based on when they released it. They released it at the perfect time. We're going right into the baseball draft. So, I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, people are going to be searching for these cards, and they're going to be like, oh, this guy is in this set that just came out. So I don't think they made a ton of it because I don't think there was tons of pre-orders on it. So I think it's gonna dry up. I think it's gonna go up too. It's just one of those things that I think Panini released it at like the perfect time.
Yeah, I think it may dip. I have a little bit different of opinion. I think it may dip because there is no logos, and you know how people in this industry are without logos. If you don't have a logo, they don't want.
Doesn't have a USA logo?
Oh, it does, but I mean you don't have the team. You don't. It has a USA logo. looking at the secondary market, you got. The highest autograph that I can see that sold is a Mark McGuire number to 25, sold for $300. In comparison, a Frank Thomas number to 200 sold for $40. So
yeah,
I mean, that's pretty low for Frank.
How many Frank Thomas autos have there been going around the last like 2 years?
Yeah, that's true.
Frank Thomas has been in everything.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, come on, dude, he got booked twice at the Summit.
Double booked.
True. True. Chris Bryant, number 229, sold for $41. So
that's a deal. You'll be able to sell that. Once everybody figures out who he is when he gets picked in the top five in a couple of days, that'll be an $80 card. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have anything aside from the USA stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go on eBay right now, and I'm just going to pick all these up from the corner of the market.
So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be dope. I'm telling you,
I just sold my Dominic Brown, like, cards. I completely forgot I had. I had some Dominic Browns. I've been collecting Dominic Brown for, you know, a couple years now, and I had some cards just sitting. Check out my cards, and I bought them for like $5 or $6. It was like Sterling Autos, and I put them up for like $20, which was like way above Beckett value. And
right.
I had no idea. I just checked, and I'm like, dude, why do I have like 60 some odd dollars in here? I'm like, I don't remember. I remember having like maybe $10, but yeah, somebody swooped them up, and
now they're
going for like $40. So that's. Everybody has to watch their check out my cards. Make sure if you're selling something, make sure you have it at the right price because somebody got a deal.
Yo, came up. Yep, that's what it is. You know, what's that Macklemore song? One guy's trash is another guy's come up or something like that. So somebody just came up.
Yeah, somebody came up on me, but it's all good. I still made money on it, so.
I know that's my worry too because I'm so damn busy that one of my prospect autos, the guy's gonna freaking hit four home runs and get called up or something, and it's gonna be like $100 card. I got a price of 50 or something. But
well, yeah,
you know you got to be active on there. I wanted to share a quick story with a Topps Redemption, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion on see if this is actually a good replacement. So this guy,
Jeremy Hellickson.
It's from Five Star. Okay, it's a 8 signatures book card of Matt Kemp, Josh Hamilton, Ryan Braun, Albert Pujols, Justin Verlander, Roy Halladay, Clayton Kershaw, and Felix Hernandez. I don't know what it's numbered to, but it's probably not numbered higher than 10, I would imagine. It doesn't say what the numbering is. So they can't get it filled. It's been sitting in the guy's, you know, queue for a long time. They offered him 6 boxes of 2013 Museum.
I thought they didn't do that.
That's what they offered him. It's
but
it says a 6-box mini case of 2013 Museum, which unless they're making some kind of different, we know that it comes in a 12-box sealed case. So unless they're actually sealing 6-box mini cases, I don't know. So you got to figure.
My issue with that is, isn't that sold out? Isn't that spoken for? Don't all the distributors have it? Are you telling me that Topps may have held back some product and maybe sell it at a higher price to distributors who are going to have to jack up the price to sell it to, you know, dealers?
I think you're a genius. I think you just figured that out.
What are you saying, Doug?
Yeah, I don't know why they have this. Are they going to call? Maybe they're calling up a distributor and getting 6 boxes back. I don't know, but probably not. They're probably sitting on this. So 6 boxes of Museum. Let's face it. Right now they're going for about $220. So they're giving him about $1,300 in product in exchange for this card, which isn't a rookie card, but it does have 8 of the most prevalent names in baseball right now. All supposed to be on it. And you probably can't put a value on the book. Would it sell for $1,300? I don't think so. I think it'd probably be $1,000.
No, dude, I would say it's probably a $400 or $500 card.
So the guy seems pissed that that's what they offered him, but I think
I would take that in a second. I would go for that in a second. There's no way that that card's worth like $1,400. Sell all the boxes and get $1,400 and buy something you really want.
Well, that would be the smart aspect of it. I was going to say, because is he going to be more pissed if he opens up a 6-box of Museum and he gets one $50 card?
If he opens up the 6 boxes in Museum, he's probably going to get. I'm going to say that card that 6-way, 8-way, whatever book it is. I'm going to say that's like a $500 card. Books, for whatever reason, just are not selling for tons and tons of money. And, you know, I've always said, like, for a collector, anytime you have, like, dual autos or triple autos or quad autos, especially, say, if it's like, I don't know, it just seems like collectors are more into going after guys that they PC, and they don't really want a book that has five other guys on it. They want their one guy that they collect. So those five other guys may devalue to certain collectors.
I mean, you're right. Yeah, because like somebody that's Matt Kemp super collector is going to pay more for a number to 10 Matt Kemp auto than a number to 10 Matt. Yeah, I agree.
Like a Matt Kemp Clayton Kershaw. Like I don't want Kershaw on the card. I would just prefer it be Matt Kemp. I don't collect Kershaw. I collect Kemp. So I think that book would only go for like $400 or $500. I don't think you'd get any more than that.
So what do you think, Ryan? You think the guy there that's mighty generous of Tops?
I think like Dan, I think, yeah, it's in that 500 to maybe, I don't see that card selling for over 1,000. One distinction I would make is that while museum boxes are 200 a box on the retail market, that box to Tops is probably, I don't know what their margin is like, but that box for Tops cost is about $100.
Yeah.
So maybe they are factoring honestly, I don't mind them offer. I think that's six boxes of one of their higher end products. I think you guys kind of liked it all right when you guys opened it. So, and you might still be even be opening because I know that's kind of a key breaking product, tribute and museum collecting. I don't mind it so much. I would be very careful as Tops. I would be very careful handing out cases. Because, yes, on the secondary market, that half case is worth $1,200, but to Tops, it's worth less than that. And so I'd be wary of that. I'd be want to stick up for collectors to say, hey, no, that's not a $1,200 case you're sending me. You're sending it directly from you. So what did you pay for it?
Right.
It's a $600 case. So send me two cases if you think that card's worth $1,200. Then you need to send me two cases to the museum. Don't look at what Blowout's selling it for. What did it cost you? They know that cost. They know that cost written in stone. I mean, but like the back of their hand, they know that cost. So, but I think, like Dan, you were saying, that card's not worth $1,200. I know that.
I get back to the fact because, I mean, we deal with distributors all the time and we have to deal with, like, them doing the whole market value thing or getting allocated the classic, we're going to have to allocate you lick. If I'm getting allocated, where the hell are these six boxes coming from?
It's true. That's a good way to look at it. Quality control. They got to hold some back to quality control.
Man, if I ever find out that Tops has a big warehouse full of stuff that they hold back and then they sell it to distributors when the market goes up on certain products, that's shady. But dude, it would make so much sense because 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when we first started doing it, we weren't hearing allocation a lot.
Yeah.
It just seems within the last couple of years, it's been, you're not going to get this much, or each distributor is getting this much, so you're going to have to order X amount of Top Series 1 to get X amount of tribute and stuff like that. They've been playing this whole game, and it wouldn't make sense. It would make sense if they're actually making, because like I told you, I'm like, if you ever want to prospect certain products and go heavy on them, when's the last time you've seen Topps triple threads go down in value?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be a hell of an investment if you were like, you know what, I got $40,000. I'm going to pre-sell $40,000 worth of Topps triple threads. I can guarantee you that in 3, 4, 5 months, you're going to make 20-30% return on investment on that deal.
Yeah.
And all you had to do was literally tie up your funds for 2 to 3 months.
Exactly. Well, and before we were running out of time, I did promise a giveaway today. So I do want to give away a spot, and we'll continue with this here, a spot in our hockey break tomorrow. It's a four-box anthology just coming out tomorrow. It's a random team break. And what I want you to do is go on sportscardradio.com, find the checklist for anthology on the site, on sportscardradio.com, and I want to know the number one base card. I want to know the guy's name that's the number one base card in the base set checklist, and I need you to call in at 347-855-8815. First person to do so will win a spot in our anthology hockey break for tomorrow. Once again, 347-855-8815. Go on sportscardradio.com. Go on the hockey anthology 2012-2013 checklist. And I want to know the name, and we've already got a caller. Let's bring him on. 305. What's going on?
Everything's great. I got the flu, but the heater on fire. So the answer you're looking for is Jágr.
That's it.
Yeah.
Who are we speaking with?
Trevor Gaffney.
Trevor, lucky winner, winner, winner. Soup dinner. So there you go. So we'll we'll get you in there. You did well on the last free one that you got with the Portland Trailblazers. You got a lot of good autos.
Yeah, thank you very much. And like you said, those preferred books are going to be going up in price.
Definitely, definitely. Basketball preferred, select, and Prism, I think, were the winners this year so far. And we'll see with Crusade and Gold Standard coming out, and then following it up with some National Treasures. Should be.
You guys might need to segue. Might need to segue into a TV show and hire a model or something, because you guys are very entertaining.
Thanks, man. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the Twitter support. It means a lot. We appreciate it. We'll see you in the chat, and we got you that spot, man. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right.
We would need a model. If we went to TV, we would need a model.
Yeah, especially with
my I would be in charge of hiring the talent. I mean, we could all three get together, but I would want to be front and center in that. I mean, we would get the most pristine-looking young woman who could speak well, but that could – new cards, though. She'd have to know cards, period. Or get trained heavily, you know, be very intelligent. But we could make that happen.
We should make that happen. I'm seeing that'd be awesome. TV show. Oh yeah.
I don't know. I got a face for radio, so we'll see, you know.
Face. So do I. So do I. I'd have the girl with me so that we could just be talking. Aren't both you guys spoken for anyways? She'd have to come my way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I could still look. I'm not dead.
Well, on that note, I think we're gonna head out for the evening because we're running short on time with Blog Talk Radio. But we'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. Make sure you check out sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com. We got five breaks tomorrow with spots available in all of them. We got a sick mixer for football with National Treasures. We got a nice baseball one with Museum. Any team style break, use 10% off. Use the code MOJOBREAK. Other than that, we are going to be out. Check us back next week. We'll have reviews on Bowman football. We'll have some more crazy stuff to talk about, maybe more Wonderlic. Maybe we'll get into religion. Maybe we'll talk more sexuality. Who knows? Who knows where the show may take us next week? So stay tuned.
No homo, we're straight.
No homo. I hope I don't get fined by the FCC or something, but I don't think there's a whole lot of
people. Man, Blog Talk Radio is going to be they're going to be hitting up your card. They're all can't do 75,000, but we'll do how about a grand?
All right. Well, that's
we love everybody. We love everybody.
Everybody. Yep, exactly. That makes that clear. But we say what we can to make it a little bit more entertaining for you guys. So we'll catch you guys next week, and we're out.
Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by SportsCardRadio.com, MojoBreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.